But we were talking about the role of the church with the farm worker movement, and how it can, on the one hand, identify with the movement for justice, and on the other hand, not become so unified with the movement that it loses its ability to be critical or prophetic. Okay, and my point was that as a priest, I was a chaplain for the farm worker movement. And I really felt that I was most effective when I was ministering to the families, and when I was doing the justice ministry on the picket lines and so forth. But the problem was, I feel that Caesar's interpretation of not only my presence but the other farm worker ministry people, if you want to use that term. His interpretation of that was that we were in his pocket, you know, that we were servants in the worst sense of that word, or in the sense of being servile, and not I think that if you become servants in the bad sense, then you lose your critical faculties of judgment, and I think that there's a delicate balance there, and it was often lost. I remember that one of the experiences when I came down to accompany Bishop Paria to L.A. when he's a bishop from Puerto Rico, Bishop Antulio Paria Bonilla, mm-hmm. and I said a mass with him in front of St. Basil's Cathedral, which was a mass in solidarity with the Chicanos who had been beaten by the police at St. Basil's when they dedicated it and had the midnight mass December 69. Mm-hmm. When I came back to Plano, Caesar was extremely angry because it conflicted with his agenda, and that was to have a rapprochement with the church in L.A. to help the farm workers, and he didn't want me being present. And as far as I'm concerned, it's all of one piece. Mm-hmm. And I certainly didn't go there to simply vent anger against the bishop, but to be in solidarity with the Chicanos. Mm-hmm. So if it's a peace movement or the farm workers, in that sense, if one has a broad political vision, it's all one struggle. Mm-hmm. I'm talking, peace, anti-Vietnam, it has to be. But
well, I can understand his point of wanting to keep his issues clear.
Yeah.
But you weren't on his staff, were you?
No, I mean, I wasn't on his staff I was a chaplain for the farm worker movement. But I wasn't on the UFW staff, no.
Okay. Now, I want to get clear about what your situation was. You went to Delano as the assistant pastor at Our Lady of...
I was an assistant pastor, but I was also a chaplain for the farm workers.
Okay, so that was the Franciscan Order's assignment for
you?
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
I originally... met Caesar it was around February of 67 when I went on a retreat down at Mission San Antonio, and we stopped off in Delano, myself and another Franciscan, and we talked to Caesar, and he told us that he really needed to have priests there because the priests around that area were all against the Union, and I was finishing off five more months at Stockton in a pastoral year. And my boss was Alan McCoy. He was a pastor. And I told him when I got back that it would be nice if I could work down there. And he worked it out so that I could, under the auspices of Franciscan Mission Band, work down there in that area. And so I went down there in... it was in the summertime of 67 and started working with... in Delano, and I got an apartment down there, and I was only there a few months when somebody complained about my presence to Bishop Willinger, who was the bishop.
How do you spell Willinger?
W-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, I think. Aloysius Willinger was his name. He was a Redemptorist priest who became a bishop, and he had been a bishop in Puerto Rico for a while, and then he was here in Fresno as a bishop of Fresno. And he sent word down that I was to get out. And I pulled out with the knowledge that he was going to retire as a bishop within two or three months, and that I could go back after that. I would go back. So I went to Fresno and lived at our Mount Carmel church, which was a Franciscan church there. Mm-hmm. And I started working, a seminarian was there with me, and we started working on a raisin and a fig ranch just to get some exercise, but also just to get some experience as farm workers, you know. And it was good. I mean, yeah, I lost about 25 pounds and got a good tan and worked out there, and it was an experience of working. Mm-hmm. When Willinger retired, Manning came in, and I just went back. I didn't ask anybody permission, and I went back down there. And it was at that point that someone told Manning that I was down there and that really shouldn't be down there. And the word came down that I was to get out. And that's when Caesar got very angry and said that every time a priest goes to help them, it happened with Father Vizard, mm-hmm. and Father Keith Kenny and other priests that would come down, they would be chased out and they would be harassed. You know, you're coming into, canon law says that, to get work in a certain area, you have to go through the pastor. It's a very clerical and very power-oriented system in the Catholic Church. Just Protestants have more leeway to minister where they want to minister, you know, like John Wesley says, the world is my parish and all that. Well, in canon law and all that, it's very specified. So I told Caesar that the word came down, and he got angry, and he called a meeting together, and they began to strategize what could be done to keep me there. Well, I set up an appointment with Manning just to sit down with him and have him tell me what's going on. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly how it came about, but that was the essence of it. So the strategy was that I would go up there and talk to Manning, and then I was going to leave, which I did. But the women, Caesar got the women together, about 30 women, and instructed them and asked them, he really put it to them, what do you want to do? And they said, well, we'll do whatever we can. So the strategy was, and I forget what exact, and I think in my book I might mention something about it, but I forget what exact month it was, but it had to have been sometime in 67. Yeah, sometime in 67 or 68.
You didn't include that in your book. Did
you? No, I didn't include that incident.
Oh, okay.
It was in the winter time. Mm-hmm. I know it was in the winter time, and I think it was like February of 68 when Manning came in. Mm-hmm. And so I went up there early in the morning, like 8 o'clock, to have a meeting with Manning, and there was a Monsignor Culleton, an old man with one eye gone, you know, and he stood there with Manning, and I think there was another priest there too, behind Manning, and I asked Bishop Manning, what is the verdict? Because I had heard that I was supposed to leave, and I was a young priest, and I guess to a certain extent I was kind of fearful and filial obedience and piety and all that. But he was very angry when I asked him what the verdict was, because he said, how dare you ask me what the verdict is? I mean, his voice was Manning's. Listen to him, his voice is very kind of whispery like that. Mm-hmm. And he sounds like Darth Vader, you know. He said, how dare you ask me for a verdict? I am the bishop, and I have, I have spoken, and this is my decision that you are to leave, you know, Delano.
Did he object to your use of the term verdict?
Yes, he very much objected to the word. And so he said, and so I said, well, there's nothing, I can't work. I said, why can't I work there? What's wrong with me? And he said, we have another Franciscan that's going to take your place. You know, somebody else is going to come there. Something along that line. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a long time. I forget the exact, but that was the tenor of the conversation. And so I said, okay, and thank you. Before I left, as I was still sitting there, the women had arrived, and they were coming into the vestibule of the office. And the word had come in, someone had come in and whispered in Manning's ear, all these farm worker women are coming here and they want to see you. And he asked me, did I put him up to it? And I said, no, I didn't, which I didn't. So I said, thank you, and I left. And then I got in my car and I drove to Santa Barbara to spend a couple of days with my sister, because I had my car all packed. I mean, I could not go back to Delano, and I knew I couldn't. So I remember I even had an apartment. I had my broom sticking halfway out the window and all my belongings and everything. I had a little Simca that I was driving, and I drove down to Santa Barbara. And I don't remember if I got all the way to Santa Barbara, but I called somewhere, and I got Jim Drake on the line, and I guess I called from Santa Barbara, and he said, come back. He said, Bishop Manning has signed a statement saying that you can stay. I said, what? Well, what happened was that it was all planned, that like Leroy Chatfield and Father Dugan, remember Father Dugan? Mm-hmm. They were on the phones in Delano, and what's her name? Marian Moses was in a phone booth outside, and they were coordinating the stuff with the women.
Was it Dugan or Duran?
No, Dugan.
I was thinking about Duran.
Dugan was there at that time, but Duran was around too, but he may have come later. But what happened was the women said they were going to sit there as long as they had to. They were not going to leave his office. See, he made the mistake of leaving the door open, so they all came right in and sat around the floor around his office, you know. And he had no idea the power of these women, you know. And the day went on, they sent in Louis Baldonado, he's a Franciscan who's now in Phoenix at the retreat house. They sent in Louis to try to calm the women down and get them out of there. They wouldn't move. They sent Monsignor Mahoney, who's now Bishop Mahoney, mm-hmm. and he came to try to talk to him, and they wouldn't listen to him because he was just parroting the party line. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Helen was sitting at the bishop's. The bishop had to go out to a confirmation, and Helen Chavez was sitting at his desk, and they had no food in there except one candy bar, and they took a knife and they cut it on the bishop's desk and handed it out to everybody. I never forget Helen telling me that little anecdote. And so when the bishop, and so at one point, the only other thing that I remember was that Rachel Orendine, by the way, who now has cancer, I heard the other day, she's living down in the valley in Texas. Rachel Orendine said,
this is Tony's wife.
Tony's wife, yeah, ex-wife, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rachel Orendine asked the bishop, why can't Father Day stay in Delano? And he said, well, he can't because I'm the bishop and I have somebody else there and I want him out of there. And she said, but why? And he said, well, I'm the bishop and God speaks through me. And Rachel responded, and don't forget, she's not even a Christian, she's a Rosicrucian. Mm. She said, well, I'm just a poor farm worker, but God speaks through me too. And it was a wonderful lesson in theology for the bishop. A theology of the people. That was really theology of liberation. You know? And the time went on and on. Finally, the bishop said, okay, you know. So he allowed me to stay there. And he wrote it out. They said, no, we don't want you to just say it. We want you to write it down. So he wrote it out. He wrote it out.
That must have been a shock for him.
Oh, definitely. He had been from L.A. here. In the highest echelons of society here, being an auxiliary bishop and having the people, just heap praise on him, and you know, because of his status as a bishop, he had never been involved in a popular struggle or anything like that. I mean, in all due fairness to him, I mean, I think he tried to take a moderate position, you know, between the wealthy growers and the workers, and I think he did have Mahoney there to work with the agricultural labor relations and so forth, but this was a rough and tumble type of experience for him, you know. And I omitted it in my book because I was still an active priest when I wrote the book, and I didn't want to embarrass him. And later on, he told Father Sean, can't think of his
Flanagan.
Last Flanagan, yeah. Did you know?
I know Sean.
Yeah, he told Sean that he was forever grateful that I never wrote it in my book.
What's a Rosicrucian?
I don't know what the origin of the Rosicrucian. They have a place down in Oceanside, mm-hmm. but it's an Eastern mystical type of religion.
Sort of a sect group?
Yeah, it's kind of a sect. And I think that there's astrology and all that mm-hmm. tied up with it. I have an encyclopedia upstairs. I can check it out.
But, I have a book at home that has a listing of all the religions.
So basically that was, and then after that I came back, and then a couple months later, several months later, we had the meeting in June or July, and then I went out on the boycott to Toronto with Jessica and Marshall, and worked there, and then for a while in Chicago, and so I combined the ministerial, sacramental type of priesthood, and the preaching, saying Mass, with organizing and editing the El Malcriado. I edited that for, I guess, about a year. All the things that organizing entails, going around the little towns, meeting the workers, speaking at rallies, animating the people, going out on the picket lines, down on the... I spent two summers in the picket lines in the Coachella, mm-hmm. and, in that 120-degree heat. And
Would that have been 68 and 69?
Yeah, I think it was 68 and 69, yeah.
So you were able to pretty easily get permission from your community to do these various things, to leave and go to Canada. And so
once I was in there, I'm sure that there were times when Alan McCoy felt uneasy about it, because it was something that, in those days, it was still very rare, for a priest to have a ministry. Well, there's always the guys that were not in parishes that were in high schools, mm-hmm. or in graduate studies, or in something like that. Mm-hmm. But there was never the idea of having anybody in a justice ministry. Nowadays, it's a dime a dozen. You look all over the place and you see.
And this was in spite of the fact that the Franciscans had had an organizing effort with farm workers in Stockton? Was that where you were? That was Stockton where you were before you came to Lake. So, but they hadn't they done organizing with farm workers there of some kind?
Who's that? No.
Franciscans.
Organizing? Not necessarily organizing.
What would you call what?
Well, they had a mission type thing. Father Arturo, he had it was like the worst of the migrant ministry type of presence. Giving out beans and rice and
direct
food
services stuff.
And rice Christianity type of thing. And a lot of people love our Father Arturo, and he did a lot of good work. And he's in his 80s now, up at Mission San Miguel. Mm-hmm. I saw him not too long ago. But it was not any kind of organizing to speak of. Mm. In Stockton there was some good work. That mission band in the previous years was mostly diocesan priests. Mm-hmm. They did some organizing. McCullough, Dugan, McDonald. Mm-hmm. McDonald is the one that discovered Caesar and all that.
So they were doing some kind of community organizing with farm workers.
Yeah, some. Some justice type stuff, but it was the very initial stages. Mm-hmm. But it was on those people's backs or shoulders that the movement was built, Mm-hmm. But I don't think there was much church presence in the early organizing of the union efforts. Mm-hmm. The old...
Out of Delano, you mean, effort, okay.
Well, pre-Delano.
I think Leroy was about the only priest that was really around.
Well, he wasn't a priest, though. He was a...
Brother, right.
He was a brother, Yeah, and then there was Father Vizard and Father Keith Kenny and Eugene Boyle and several people like that.
Yeah, I think Gene Boyle came in after the Delano strike began.
Yeah.
But early after that.
Yeah.
Did the decision by the... the bishops to have the bishops committee on farm labor, did that really free people in the church up to participate without having to worry as much?
Probably so. I think more and more communities were committing people to join the effort, And I think it just gradually became from a very controversial thing to get involved in it to a more comfortable thing for people to get. A lot of nuns especially, mm-hmm. more and more nuns came in. and a few priests here or there came in. But
I met with Alan McCoy, and he was telling me about how he worked to try to get that parish in Delano for the Franciscans. And were you in on any of that, or aware of?
Well, I lived for a while with the pastor there, Father Alibart.
Was he a Franciscan?
He was diocesan. Oh, he was the old, old school, you know, the old Spanish. Mm-hmm. I never did discuss with Alan what efforts were being made to get the parish. I mean, what did he say?
Well, he was telling me that because Caesar really wanted to be able to have a supportive priest in that part of Delano, that there had been a conversation with some kind of the Franciscans, and I have to go back over the tape.
Yeah.
To know who it was. I think it was with Alan.
Yeah.
And that that he then went ahead to work with the diocese to try to get permission to staff that church. And then they went on later after that to get permission to staff several other churches that the Farmers were interested in having staffed by Franciscans. And he told me what they were. There were one or two in Fresno and a couple of others.
Oh, well, there was the one in Fresno was there for years, though.
Mm.
That was Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
I mean, it was another one that he mentioned.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to listen to it.
Let's see, there wasn't any in Bakersfield.
It was one where he had a lot of problems, though, because there were a lot of growers in that church.
Oh. Oh. I'm trying to think.
But as he recalls it all, it was a very conscious effort on his part to try to get Franciscans into some key churches where the farm workers wanted some help.
Yeah. The only one that I know of is Delano, and then Al Peck became the pastor, and Eddie Frunsky was there too. He's now in Mescalero, mm-hmm. Arizona.
Were those
Mescalero, Franciscan? New Mexico. That's a Franciscan parish, yeah.
I mean, were those were Franciscans then that came in?
Yeah,
Eddie. And the senior pastor?
Yeah, Al came as the pastor, yeah. Pastor, he was the pastor. And then he left the priesthood also. I don't know exactly when, but after he left Delano.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ignatius de Groot came in. Ignatius is now the pastor of St. Mary's in Sacramento.
Mm.
He's a very brilliant Dutch guy who was in the seminary with me. I called him recently.
Mm-hmm. In connection with that story you were working on about the Pope going to...
Yeah, and also, Mahoney has an authoritarian streak in him, and he put out a 5-page letter saying nobody could speak in his diocese without his permission. And my boss wanted me to follow up on it, which I did.
Jeez.
And Ignatius told me that he and some other priests were very concerned about that. So I did the story, and Mahoney was very displeased about it. And we had an editorial in there that really took him on, which was good, you know, because there's a lot of rumors that he may be the next Archbishop Cardinal here.
Mm.
So I talked to Iggy about it in Sacramento. But I can't think of what the other church is.
Well, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
In your book, you mention, this is a quote that you had in there, that your life was irrevocably changed by your experiences with farm workers. And I wondered if you would say something about how, in what ways.
Well, I think that maybe it's true with regard to a lot of the migrant ministry people who come from middle-class backgrounds. I mean, I came from a middle-class background, even though my parents are politically liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I had very little contact with Spanish-speaking until I went to Stockton. And I think that experience with the farm workers there and beginning to learn some Spanish. I mean, we did take Spanish in the seminary, which was a wonderful thing. One of the few practical things we learned in the seminary, you know. But then getting out and going to Stockton and then going to Delano, and I think the thing that the real change is that the work, you know, it's like somebody recently used the word, the poor evangelize us, you know, that that in the context of ministry, if you keep your mind open, then the farm workers can make you aware of your own hang-ups as a middle-class person and the privileges that you have and the need that we have to share, you know. So I think that, I mean, obviously it wasn't a total conversion, but I mean it was a real change of attitude that you cannot go back to. I mean, your interests in life change, you know. You're not as fastidious about certain things, and you feel at home with the people. And there's a Hispanic culture. There's struggle of the farm workers when they're doing without. I mean, they had, you know, people like Julio Hernandez and all those people, Caesar's family, and other people doing without the basic necessities quite often in the struggle. And you're out there boycotting and taking a lot of the abuse that the workers take on the picket line and experiencing it and getting angry and then fighting all those little campaigns that are part of the big campaign. That changes you. I mean, I think that's why I'm interested in Central America now and have made many trips to Latin America and see the focus, as Leonardo Boff said, the spiritual center of the church has moved from in our church, from Rome to the third world. That's where the spirit, the prophetic things are taking place, liberation theology. I think the farm worker movement was a great introduction to liberation theology. As a matter of fact, I was reading some of those Gustavo Gutierrez's book when I was still with the farm workers in Delano. I mean, I had his book then. So that those were the first years back in the late 60s, early 70s when... So to me, it was, it was a change.
When you said at the beginning of that about being middle class and talking about our great need to share, what did you mean?
Well, I mean, sharing your time, sharing yourself, sharing... if you want to use that word, empowering, you know, I know it's not always a good word, but it's helping people to gain the type of self-confidence and status in our society. That's what I mean. You know, I always liked the way, you know, the Franciscans always we have the vow of poverty, which means. And I was really geared, it came out of the Middle Ages, in the context of the Middle Ages, where there were the mayores and the minores in society, the better and the lesser. And Francis said, or called his brother, brotherhood, the lesser brothers, order of friars minor. And so there's always been debates throughout Franciscan history, what does that really mean? Should you wear rags? And I always remember Chris Hartmeyer saying that the migrant ministry people take poverty seriously, but it's a functional poverty. In other words, you live simply, you don't get a lot of money, you get enough to keep your family fed, to do your job, and if you need a halfway decent car, if you're driving back and forth from LA, you need a car that is not going to break down. So it's a functional thing, you know, and that's what I mean by sharing. Mm-hmm. You know, sharing to a certain extent materially, but sharing the spirit and sharing your work and your talents. I mean, let's face it, we had 14 years of education, 4 years of college, 4 years of theology, and there's a lot of talent there to share with people.
Did you feel free to really use a lot of that?
I think so. I think that we had a progressive theological, thanks to the Franciscan seminary system, a progressive theological and humanities type education, so that we could move in there and share with the migrant ministry of Protestants people take a more biblically oriented approach which was new at that time, because when you consider when you consider where the priests in the valley were with their theology, which was terribly passé and pre-Vatican II, and I think our post-Vatican theology lent itself to more self-determination. Even, of course, it could have been a lot better, but at that time it was good. So I think kind of a lot of interesting things came together to make that movement successful.
And something I really appreciated in your book was that you had a lot of stories about farm workers themselves, about people that most people would never have heard of, and had quotes from them. I really appreciated that.
Good.
It was a really unique contribution.
I tried to make it a people's book, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the Al Rojas and his taking his family on the boycott, and mm-hmm. Julio Hernandez, and the little incidents in the towns where the kids would be beaten by the cops, and there'd be a picket line in front of the jail and stuff like that.
It made it real easy to picture how things really were.